Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. As the president breaks bread with a group of Republican senators in an effort to find a way around the sequester stalemate, we'll begin with a look into whether the deficit-cutting mania that led to the sequester is losing steam as cuts begin to ripple through the economy and perhaps come home to roost in midterm elections, when deficit hawks may have to explain to their constituents why frustrating President Obama's ability to govern is more important than America's economic recovery. Jeff Madrick, who writes a column on economics for Harper's and is the author of Age of Greed, The Triumph of Finance and the Decline of America, 1970 to the Present, joins us to discuss whether Obama can find enough adults in the room to avoid more self-inflicted economic wounds. Then we'll speak with Dr. Helen Caldicott, who is organizing a major international symposium in New York on next week's second anniversary of the Fukushima nuclear disaster. We will discuss the mounting medical and ecological consequences of the multiple meltdowns in Japan that will cost over $100 billion to clean up over the next 40 years, and what lessons have been learned 2 years later with 23 boiling water reactors similar to Fukushima still operating in the United States. Then finally, we'll get an update on the disputed elections in Kenya, where the frontrunner, Uhuru Kenyatta, who is due to stand trial before the International Criminal Court for fueling the violence that killed over 1,000 people after the 2007 election, has accused the British High Commissioner of shadowy and suspicious involvement in the counting of ballots. Nia Kwete, an independent researcher and analyst on Africa, joins us to discuss the possibility of a dispute over spoiled ballots turning violent. And joining us now is Jeff Madrick, a journalist, economic policy consultant and analyst, and director of the Rediscovering Government Initiative at the Roosevelt Institute. He writes a column on economics for Harper's and is the editor of Challenge magazine and contributes regularly to the New York Review of Books, the New York Times, and his books include Taking America, The End of Affluence, The Case for Big Government, and Age of Greed, The Triumph of Finance and the Decline of America, 1970 to the Present. He has an article in the current issue of the New York Review of Books, The Sequester's Hidden Danger. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jeff Madrick.
Nice to speak with you, Ian. That's actually on the New York Review of Books blog.
Oh, it's on the blog.
A written piece in the about how good Geithner was in the written New York Review of Books, but I think we're going to talk about the sequester this evening.
Well, we are, but when you say how good Geithner was, surely there's some irony there, right?
Yeah, well, yes, indeed. You'll enjoy the piece.
There's no question that Geithner was behind the scenes, was protecting Wall Street, going to the mat for them, just like the Republicans are going to the mat for the billionaires. He went to the mat for Wall Street, it would seem.
Yeah, that's basically what I'm talking about. I fill in some of the blanks there, but yeah.
Well, but let's turn to the sequester, because it seems as though the conventional wisdom now is that Obama really got sort of snookered. He thought that because this deal was so bad, and that was the whole purpose of it, that they'd come to their senses before it went into effect. And the Republicans then at some point or other decided tactically it was better to go along with it than to say the sky was falling. So they did a bait and switch, and now they're claiming victory.
Well, you know, they may be claiming victory, but I don't know if they're going to have a victory. They've got to face voters who may indeed, in the end, be waiting on long lines at airports and so forth. They're going to be facing voters who lost their jobs at defense plants. They're going to be facing voters who can't get their educational subsidies and so forth. So it's not, frankly, Ian, it's not that clear. I think it's a pretty dumb group, these Republicans. I don't think they're that clever. I do think they're pretty mean-spirited in the name of tough love, quote-unquote. Bill Clinton used to say that. So while I think Obama has never played this deficit game very well and hasn't played the sequester game very well, he should have tried to get it written out of law altogether. My sense is the Republicans may not, in the end, win this ball game.
Well, they should.
That's a curveball for you.
Sure, but Jeff Madrick, they shouldn't be winning it at all. And I think the reason why they're not being pilloried, I think, is because the mainstream press are taking them to the task, and because they're, the mainstream press is still afflicted by this bogus notion of balance, that where for every argument there's an equal and opposite argument. And it's very difficult, it seems, for people to call it like it is. Now, I'll give you an example. On the Sunday Meet the Press, David Gregory challenged John Boehner when he was lying through his teeth, saying that the White House has never offered up any plans and right. that the Senate is sitting on their hands. And Gregory said, wait a minute, no, they've been sending bills up there and they can't get past Mitch McConnell's filibuster. And then when he was Boehner was caught in an obvious lie, he raises his voice and starts shouting like a kid that's been caught red-handed. I mean, it's pathetic.
I do. I agree. It's pathetic. It's the Congress has become pathetic. These guys got a minority vote. They got control partly because of gerrymandering. They're somewhat hysterical. I think they're this hysterical because they're losing. You know, they're losing this battle. So I do not think Americans are on their side. They may go down yelling and screaming. Maybe they'll bring the ship down with them. But if you think they will, Ian, I disagree with you. I think that they are on the losing side of this battle. That doesn't mean I think Obama couldn't have played his cards much better. But, we've all had our frustrations with the media. They buy into austerity economics, the media.
Right.
It's just appalling. And then they always lump Social Security with Medicare and Medicaid as if they're all equally, equally responsible for a deficit in 2030.
Right.
They're really an outrageous bunch. You know, there is a little bit of good news out there down the road. Healthcare costs have been growing very slowly. You know this, I know. For 4 years now, rising healthcare costs are the big cause of any future federal budget deficit. I don't mean in 2020, but I mean in 2035, which is when the real alarm begins. Well, the projections by the Congressional Budget Office for rising health care costs are so ridiculous, yet driving this highly irrational debate about cutting spending now and balancing budgets as soon as we can. I can't see straight about this, but it is changing. They have reduced their expectations of health care cost increases for the next 10 years, but they've got to reduce them for the next 25 and 30 and 35 years. Mm-hmm. And yet that's what's driving alarm. That's what makes Pete Peterson credible. He shows a Congressional Budget Office document that says we've got this crazy budget deficit in the year 2035, and interest payments on the accumulating debt are out of sight. And it's a bogus projection. It's simply bogus. So the good news is, I think, for us, the pressure is that the healthcare programs won't be that costly, and I wish Obama and those people would start to recognize it and put their foot down and say, we're not going to make any serious reductions in Medicare benefits or Medicaid benefits. We want to see what's going on here and how Obamacare can work and all that kind of thing. So the upshot is, I think the Republicans are dastardly. I think they're not only shooting themselves in the foot, they're shooting themselves in far more vital organs and shooting us as well. But I actually see some hope that they're going to back off some of this nonsense now. You know, maybe I'm as naive as Obama, but I hope not.
Well, I was just suggesting that the Republicans, all of you say is true. They're doing all of these things, but what they're really doing, which is what they should be pulled over for, is deliberately tanking the U.S. economy because they have this obsessive hatred of Obama, and that Mitch McConnell is preventing anything from going through the Senate. And what Cantor and Boehner and all of them keep talking about is a total lie, that they're all about not raising taxes, but that's not true. Nobody's suggesting you raise taxes on working Americans or middle-class Americans. The only thing Obama's suggesting is you close the loopholes, particularly on these hedge fund people. And we've just had the Forbes list of that we have more billionaires than ever. And a lot of them are these hedge fund guys who have carried interests and pay next to no taxes. That's what he's talking about. And that's the part of that frustrates me, is that when one side of a political argument comes up with absolutely bogus lies, somehow it's treated as an equal and opposite argument from the other side, who frankly aren't making a strong argument. I wish to God somebody would get tough in this argument and lay it out on the line.
Well, I am writing another piece for Harper's along those lines, and I hope Obama will, you know, we're still somehow in the shadow of Ronald Reagan, not because of his abilities, but because of the deficit mania. He began, really, by creating deficits. We shouldn't have gotten that upset about them back then, even though he was doing it. But we're still fighting those same battles. I mean, Bill Clinton fought them as well, welfare reform and refusing to make public investments, even when he had surpluses to work with. So yeah, I'm totally with you. It's time to tell the American people, talk to them straight. But Obama was part of this deficit mania also. He believes in austerity economics also. Even before, as you remember, he was inaugurated the first time around in early 2009, he was talking about cutting the deficit, and then he named those two deficit hawks to head the deficit commission. So, yeah, we're dealing with a problem because the American people have been badly misinformed, and the media just do not do their job. The best of them are inconsistent. The worst of them have swallowed the austerity economics argument whole, even though there are, you know, loud voices out there trying to say otherwise, like Paul Krugman.
Well, Jeff Madrick, also I think the New York Times, I think, has been carrying some very important stories, like the front page story on Tuesday about how the municipal bond market, in effect, is being used by private interests to get tax-free investment, which is supposedly for municipalities to invest in infrastructure, but instead big companies like Goldman Sachs and they're actually financing the building of their own headquarters with tax-exempt money.
Yeah, well, the city claims that's a benefit to the city. That's how that works. I guess I've been around so long, Ian, that I knew all of that.
Right. Well, it's just that...
I'm just an old cynical, old-timer cynic, you know?
Right. Well, I'm just...
I think the Times has been doing some good stories. On the other hand, I think they're mealy-mouthed about some things as well, you know, and inconsistent. So sometimes good, sometimes bad, but they should almost always be good.
Right. But I think that what we're faced with now is somebody ought to point out the obvious paradox is that you've got the stock market doing better than ever, and now you've got, 100,000 fewer low-income children are going to be prepared for school through Head Start, 17 million fewer Meals on Wheels delivered to seniors suffering from food insecurity, 1.6 million fewer unemployed Americans serving through job training, education, and employment services. And so on. So there are the two Americas at work. One of them's doing incredibly well. The group that we bailed out after they crashed the economy, they're doing great. The rest of us are really floundering. And that's where I say, where's the revolution, ladies and gentlemen?
Yeah, but how long have we been saying that, Ian?
Not very often, actually. I feel it all the time, but I don't say it very often.
Yeah.
I hate to be a broken record here.
The thing is, there are a couple of good things in the economy. The health care costs have gone down. Consumer debt is now down. Interest, when you include interest rates, the debt service now is compared to after-tax income is now around 1994 levels. But it's the politicians who are holding us back with crazy reductions in spending power. In other words, fiscal contraction. The only good news is it's not as bad as Europe. We're not as dumb as Europe at the moment. But the piece I wrote, that New York Review of Books blog, talks about the intellectual bankruptcy of this austerity economics idea, and I'm totally with you. The Republicans simply want this economy to be bad. They do not want to take a hit in the midterm elections, and they think if they keep unemployment up, they won't. And I'm not sure that they're right about that. I'm not sure that people might not throw out a couple of these guys this time around. So sometimes the people have to talk some sense at the election booth, and maybe this time they will.
Again, I'm speaking with Jeff Madrick, who is a journalistic economic policy consultant and analyst and director of the Rediscovering Government Initiative at the Roosevelt Institute. He writes a column on economics for Harper's and is the editor of Challenge magazine. And he has an article, a blog at the New York Review of Books, The Sequester's Hidden Danger. So what do you think the president is likely to gain from these talks he's having with some sensible Republicans, the so-called Common Sense Caucus that includes Senator Rob Portman of Ohio, Susan Collins of Maine, right, Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, even though he's been on Obama's case a lot, Tom Coburn, who's a real economic fundamentalist, Bob Corker of Tennessee, etc., Roy Blunt of Missouri as well, apparently. Any possibility that he can peel off enough common sense people to help him out here?
I think there's a possibility. I'm in favor of talking. I do think something is changing. There have been some Republican consultants, right-wing Republican consultants, who say, we better start talking about providing programs for America and stop talking about this budget. They are talking that way to some degree. And I think people even like Lindsey are thinking a little differently. So I'm not saying there's any daylight out there. I'm not saying the clouds have parted. But I think the weather report, it is not clear that the clouds won't break somewhere in the near term. I'm not certain they won't. And that, I think, oddly enough, is partly why the stock market was up. The stock market would not be up if it thought these guys were going to shut down the government in a month. Doesn't mean the stock market's right. We know that for sure. But that's partly why it was up. I think they're getting a little sense that maybe this whole thing's gone too far. And even a couple of Republicans might figure that out. It's distressing. But maybe we're finally at a place where a little sense can leak into the Washington back rooms.
So
I know you don't believe that for a second, Ian. I can hear it in your silence.
No. You. I'm not by nature a pessimist. I'm just outraged by how our politics have disintegrated so much into a kind of nastiness, and that how the system is so captured by money. But it does seem that the Republicans have turned into such faithful whores and hirelings of the billionaires that they go to the mat for them so shamelessly that I just find it disgraceful. And then I wish that a political leader could step up and make a case for the American people against the unbridled greed of a handful of people who seem to be able to...
I'm with you. We've talked often enough that I'm with you, but we just don't have that person. I don't even believe in his heart that Obama is very much left of being a pure moderate. I think he probably does believe the deficit has to be balanced, or, that shouldn't be able to rise above 70% in the next 10 years. He may believe all of that stuff. He again appointed a Clinton person to head the Office of Management and Budget. So these things are not encouraging to me, but
Jeff, I don't see it as a left-wing issue, economic fairness, the growing disparity in wealth. I think our capitalism is in crisis. I think that these people that too much greed is going to destroy America, and we're on that path where these people just extract wealth and don't create wealth. It's really, I think, a very sort of centrist patriotic argument about restoring and reviving American capitalism and prying it loose from a handful of greedy bankers like Jamie Dimon and company, who somehow convinced everybody that we got to play by their rules.
Yeah, well, you say it very eloquently. I think essentially I agree with you, but then we've got to get on with the process. I've been critical of Dodd-Frank as not serious enough to revamp and refashion the financial industry. It's not merely a matter of avoiding the next crisis, which is what Dodd-Frank seemed to be addressing. It's how to orient Wall Street to provide capital to productive uses instead of their own speculation. So I've been talking about that a lot in my life. I like the way you put it. But still, I would strike people as some kind of populist notion that smacks of left-wing dangers. And
well, you know, the last time anybody said things like that was William Jennings Bryan, and he may have been a populist, but he was also a, you know, those days there was such a thing as a religious left, you know, and he was the guy in the Scopes trial that supported creationism. So again, it seems to be not a real left-right issue. It seems to have all kinds of other political nuances. But Jeff, I don't mean to get you on to babble on here. I'm sorry that I have, but I'm just sort of in a bad mood, I guess.
You're allowed. There's plenty of reason to be in a bad mood in the U.S. And I'm just starting to get a glimmer of hope. So allow me one good night's sleep.
Absolutely. Listen, I love to end on that note, and I thank you so much for joining us, Jeff.
It's always fun and enlightening to speak to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, I've been speaking with Jeff Madrick, who's a journalist, economic policy consultant, and analyst, and director of the Rediscovering Government Initiative at the Roosevelt Institute. He writes a column on economics for Harper's and is the editor of Challenge magazine and contributes regularly to the New York Review of Books and New York Times. His books include Taking America, The End of Affluence, The Case for Big Government, and Age of Greed, The Triumph of Finance and the Decline of America, 1970 to the Present. He has an article or a blog at the New York Review of Books, The Sequesters, Hidden Danger. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking with Dr. Helen Caldicott.
It's the money.